What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we have Jake Lentner, a guitarist out of Nashville. He's currently with Cody Jinx. He also does session work too, I believe. He's a bit of a jack of all trades. So, what you been up to, man? You been keeping busy?
Oh yeah, and hey, thanks for having me on the show. Always happy to connect with new people on these things and spread the word of what I'm doing and learn about what else is going out there.
For sure.
So yeah, what I do in my downtime outside of Cody, I just did a van tour this past weekend with a rock band I've been a part of for a long time, mm-hmm. called Ferris and the Wheels, and we went up through the Midwest. And we did it, you know, the old fashioned way in a big old SUV and all of our stuff. And yesterday, basically. And then the week prior to that, I did some other session work with a country artist here in town who I really dig his stuff, Michael Lisenby.
Okay.
He's an interesting one because he's out of the Pacific Northwest, but mm-hmm. his sound is really like that red dirt Texas, Oklahoma style.
Yeah.
You know, so I was happy to do sessions with him. Always good to play with him. And now this week, I'm just getting prepped to go into the studio again in Texas with Cody himself. So
right on. So you've been pretty busy then, it sounds like.
I try to stay as busy as I can. right out of the gate this new year. Yeah, we immediately went to Colorado to a house out in Durango to get ready for the upcoming studio session. We got all of our songs listed out. We got kind of the arrangements down, and now we'll bring it to the actual studio.
Right on. And
yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Liz, we were talking about Liz before we started recording. She did mention Ferris and the Wheels, and I wanted to make sure to bring that up, man. So you said that you've been a part of that for a while. Like, when did that all start up and how'd that all come together?
So to go to the beginning of that, mm-hmm. I've been in Nashville about 11 years. And so I moved down from Massachusetts really for the rock scene. I was never like a country guy or anything. Mm-hmm. And so I moved here in that time it was Cage the Elephant and Kings of Leon and Jack White and the Black Keys. And I was really into all that stuff. So came down here in 2013 and immediately started putting all my stuff on Facebook and Craigslist. This was really before Instagram.
Yeah.
Definitely before TikTok. And so Jeff, that's Ferris, he was getting a project going again that was kind of like Beatles-y Nirvana alternative. It's its own thing.
Okay.
He called it like a carnival of rock and roll. And so he found me on Craigslist because I put up my own ad just saying basically, hey, if anybody needs a heavy-hitting guitar player, you know, then I post some videos and stuff. So then we just started working over and over and over again. I've actually toured with him and that band, Van and Trailer, that whole thing, all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so we still play, though. I've been with Cody for about 4 years now, but Jeff and I still write and jam together and tour and, you know, we still do it. We put out a full-length album in April, which is this 9-song concept album with a 24-page short story. And we're talking like as concept as it gets.
Oh, hell yeah.
So now, you know, we just continue to write more spacey rock tunes, more psychedelic alternative tunes. And that's that portion of my music world. And it's still a blast. And Jeff and I haven't grown to hate each other yet. So we have, you know, rhythm sections that we use. We use, you know, pretty much the same guys a lot. But yeah, that's kind of that band in a nutshell.
Right on. That's has to be pretty cool for you too, though, man. You mentioned that you're much more of a rock guy. And personally, I am too. It's funny that because I'm doing this for Rage Rowdy, which is primarily a country website. Yeah. And to be honest, I don't listen to much country. So it's kind of funny. It's cool to talk to guys who could have that kind of same mindset about it. And I'd imagine that has to be cool to have that portion of your career, like the rock stuff that you seem to be really into, and also have the Cody Jinx country music avenue. And like, even like Cody Jinx, I mean, that has some rock shit to it too, I think. Like when I listen to Cody Jinx, there's definitely a bit of like blues rock, kind of more of that feel, in my opinion. I don't know what you think, but
if you were to go to one of our shows, a Jinx show, you'd mm-hmm. ask, wait a minute, is this a country show or is this like a heavy hitting Southern rock show?
Yeah.
It's still country music, right? But Cody, with his metal background, that's what he did first.
Mm-hmm.
It inevitably kind of creeps out. The heaviness kind of shows its face, you know?
Right.
And actually, the Ferris and the Wheels, that's the reason I'm in with Cody, because we put out an EP back in 2015. And it wasn't until 2021 that Cody was looking for another guitar player to do his side project, his metal side project with. He reached out to his producer, who reached out to their mastering engineer. And so it turns out we were using the same mastering engineer.
Oh, perfect.
So he said, you know, I think I might have the guy for you, Cody. So that's how that started.
That's awesome. So with
one Ferris and the Wheels.
Yeah. So when it comes to playing with Cody, then, are you not like some bands do? They have like their live band, then they have studio guys. Do you do both of them?
Cody is his band. Is his band?
Record,
we you know, write riffs together. We come up with stuff in the studio, and then we hit the road. He like the Tone Deaf Hippies. That's his band. That is his band. through and through.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, that's kind of a new concept to me. Like when I first started, because you know, you see guys like on stage, and you'd imagine they all go into the studio together and play. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like, is that like a rarity? You know, like
man, in the country world, it kind of is. In the modern country landscape, it's you have your touring band and you have your studio band, and with a lot of artists using tracks and ear triggers and stuff, where you have everything being piped in through your ears. Sometimes, you know, there's extra stuff that's just coming through the PA that bands aren't playing. There's 1,001 different ways to play live now. But it seems to be more of a rarity in country world that the touring band is the same as the recording world band. Now in rock and metal, it's always been the band is the band.
For sure.
That's where I came from.
Right. And like, that's just more of an appealing look, I think. But it is a business, and you never know how a certain artist really rolls that way. But with your, I don't know if challenging is the right word, but like when you moved into like the Cody Jinx world, was there any kind of, culture shock maybe, or anything different that really stood out?
Well, I told him, so I met him about four whatever years ago, for a metal side project. And we were down in Texas in the studio for 2 weeks. And I was like, oh yeah, I can get into this stuff. No problem. That's my bread and butter. I can play that stuff all day. But then when his manager at the time called me 2 months later and said, hey, you want to fill in for the country shows? Well, thinking to myself, I'm like, oh shit, I'm not a country musician. But then I just kind of said, yes. And just was like, you know what? I'll figure it out when I get
there. Yeah.
And then Cody hired me, and I again said, I'm on board if you are, but you know how I play. Mm-hmm. I'm not a chicken picking Telecaster guy. I literally did not ever own a Telecaster until I joined Cody's band.
Well,
and so, but he's like, no, that's why we want you. Cause Chris Clarity, our other guitar player, he's Western swing, old school country, Texas blues. But then I'm on the literally opposite side of the spectrum with, Les Paul chunky chords and screaming rock leads and stuff. So we're very dynamic players together in that world.
That's awesome. That makes for like a diverse band, though. It makes for like being able to sound however you really want.
All the bands I'm in, whether it's Cody, Ferris, or the thing I'm about to kick off a project with my brother, every musician in all the projects are extraordinarily diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Ferris, our drummer is this incredible technical progressive metal guy that can weird time signatures and all this stuff. And then our bass player is like primarily funk rock and R&B bass player. And then the Cody band, we got a jazz drummer. Hot Rod, our steel player, is literally one of the best in the world. He's his steel playing is unbeatable. And then Chris, the Western swing guitar player, me, like it's all very diverse. The important part is can you work well with one another, and can you make a very unique sound as a cohesive unit?
Yeah. So when you,
that's where backgrounds come in.
Yeah. So like when you, like with the band aspect, when you were like dropped into the band, was it hard to gel at first when it came to like a different sound? Did it come pretty easy to you? How'd that work?
So the way that worked was when I was down in the desert and where we're literally going at the end of the week, Cody was recording his metal side project and his country album Mercy at the same exact time. So it came by on one studio, literally 30 feet to the left was Mercy getting recorded. Yeah. So the producer, they're bouncing back and forth. But what that did was I was already hanging out with all those guys for 2 weeks. So when I came back that July to fill in the country band, I was kind of like, oh yeah, hey guys, good to see you again.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as shocking. The music was still, I was like, okay, I got to really be pretty loose with that to be ready for whatever. But I already was hanging out with them for 2 weeks straight, 6 weeks prior. Mm-hmm. So it made it easier.
Right. Yeah. And it's just a really fascinating sound that Cody has and has had for a while. It's because he gets grouped into like the Texas or the red dirt kind of genres a lot. And I think a lot of that scene, in my opinion, I mean, like there's no real certain sound like with those guys. Like there's like people think Texas music or, you know, like any of the alternative country stuff, like it's just country. But a lot of the time, it has that rock sound. It has that grunge sound. It's really interesting.
Look at like Cole Wetzel, who's really good. He can be qualified as Texas grunge. You know, incredible. Or then you got this band Dexter and the Moon Rocks.
Oh yeah, they're crazy.
Yeah, they are. I guess more pushing like space grunge in a way. Yeah. Or one of my favorites from, you know, that we've toured with a lot is Randy Rogers. That's like real red dirt stuff. But it still has kind of a rockin' thing to it. Or you push it all the way to the deathcore world and you have Fit for an Autopsy and all that. My other favorite stuff.
Right on. With the being in Nashville, most people think like right away, like country, songwriter, that kind of music. How is the rock scene there? Because like I think from a casual like fan or like just someone going through Nashville, they might not get a good glimpse of how the rock scene is.
Okay, so that's a little bit of a complicated answer. So okay. where are you located?
I'm in Cincinnati.
We were literally just in Cincinnati.
Really?
Friday night we were in Cincinnati.
No way.
We played at Madison Live. Okay, so it's Covington, Kentucky. So right.
Yeah, I'm like 2 minutes from there.
We will be back. We'll go to Cincinnati.
I'll catch a show.
A good rock scene. I think Cincy has a great, pretty good rock scene.
Yeah.
Here, there was a good one, like 2014 through 2018 or so. The pandemic did hit pretty hard when it came to a lot of rock bands that were playing around. Like, first of all, the biggest example I can give is this place called Mercy Lounge. Mm. They used to have this thing called 8 off 8th, 8 bands, 8 rock bands every Monday off of 8th Ave. They used to do all these events where like every rock band gets a showcase. And there was, a pretty good scene. The pandemic hit it hard. I haven't seen a whole lot of activities since then. It's there. You just kind of got to seek it out a little more. Because like in the pandemic, a lot of people moved away. Various rock venues closed, like our super famous one, Exit Inn, that got sold and bought by some venture capitalist company, and now they only play like record label kind of bands, you know.
Yeah.
So it's there, but I think it's in like kind of a dormant stage.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Right.
If that okay.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, that's kind of how I viewed it. Like whenever I take my trips out there, I'd like to, you know, catch some kind of rock show or something. Like you said, besides like the big venues there, there's always rock shows coming through. But like the actual local scene, I feel like is very hard to like find.
Yeah, it was really cool. I would say like 2016, we were playing gigs, you know, we could put 200 people in a room, a couple hundred people in any place easily, you know. Yeah. And we were touring our asses off. We were doing pretty well. I think the pandemic did a lot of it. And then, well, the other thing was, you know, country really started taking off. So a lot of that, well, myself included, a lot of the musicians in some of those bands started getting picked up by big country artists.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember the Florida Georgia Line bass player. He was like a metalcore guy. Like,
wow.
You know, like, yeah. So everybody started getting picked up by big, huge tours.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you're going to do that, you know?
Yeah, for it's sure.
Like, hey, you want to go play in front of 10,000 people?
Right. In the Nashville scene, is there, I love asking this to artists because it's usually always different answers. So is there more of a sense of like camaraderie or more of a sense of competition? A mixture of both, I'm sure. But is there a certain one that like really peaks his head more?
It all depends on the scene you're in. So there's like my brother, Joe, he does a lot of songwriters rounds and that's a very tight group. They're a great supportive group. You know, he's always getting invited, but he's always collaborating with them. That writers round, I think it's called 615 Tour Stop. And they do writers rounds, you know, at different places every week. That's a very good supportive community.
Mm-hmm.
I think when it comes to competitiveness, that's always going to be there a little bit. I've seen it with artists who are super competitive, who are like really they gatekeep their contacts and stuff. I think when you have the elusive lottery of fame in the distance there, the competitiveness is always going to be slightly there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yes. But for the most part, I'd say it's still pretty supportive, you know.
Yeah.
I don't really know the music scene in Los Angeles or anything like that, but I'd say is you can make a good amount of friends pretty fast.
Yeah, and a lot of the like I'll bring like the Texas guys, I know a lot of them, and the Red Dirt guys, and that just seems like I know that scene better. So like Nashville, I only see like sometimes. So like when I talk to like the Texas and Oklahoma guys, it seems like total sense of community. Of course, there's like, you know, a few bad eggs I hear, but like whenever I ask them about like, hey, have you ever like made a trip to Nashville? Are you wanting to go to Nashville, do this or that? A lot of them are very like hesitant, or they don't say what they really think. They have the whole like the machine aspect of the town, like the industry, all that.
Well, yeah, because when you're looking at it from a business standpoint, you're not. So when I was talking about it, it's more about like artist to artist, venue. But if you're looking at a Red Dirt artist who's thinking about moving to Nashville, you know, to like start sinking their teeth into the machine, that's a little different. I've literally always been in the DIY world.
Okay.
And the independent, which shit, even with Cody, I'm still in the DIY. Is the definition of that. So the machine part of it, I get the hesitation because they want you to do certain stuff. They want you to have certain, they want you to do your social media in certain ways. They want to use certain session members for recording. So that I understand the hesitation for. Like you're an artist and you've been playing with your band for years and you love the way your guitar player and drummer do stuff together, and then you move to Nashville and you get the elusive record deal and they say, well, hey, listen, we're gonna use, you know, some of our session guys at Warner or Sony or whatever.
Right.
You're gonna be kind of like, hey, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems, and like you met, like when they want to like implement, like get on like the socials more, social media, that just being such a necessary thing, apparently, clearly not for you guys doing the, you know, but like for a lot of these bands, it's like, they're just in such like, their brains are in knots because they're constantly worrying about the social media, the TikToks, all that stuff. And I hear like, it's a great thing, but also It's a horrible thing. I'm curious as to what your stance is on that.
Well, okay. Glad you brought that up, because we had this funny idea driving to literally going to Cincinnati. We're like, what if a new band were to start with, but they pretended it was like 1992. They did not have any online presence. The most you get is like a phone number.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, and to see this band, you can promote it on your own personal page, right?
Yeah.
But you can't, the entity of the band itself cannot have social media or, you know, showing up to hear the music. You got to go to a show, buy a physical ticket to go to the show, buy a CD.
You have to walk past a flyer, and that's the only reason you're going to know about it.
We were joking around, like, in this day and age, would that be at all possible? Would it just be a total failure, or is there a minuscule chance people would be kind of intrigued?
I
get their asses to go to the show.
I think it would be, I don't know if you want to call it a gimmick, but I think it would be a pretty cool like gimmick or bit to like just be like, we're passing flyers out, we're gonna do like the old school way, and like that might like ironically get some fans to come, and then I'm like, oh shit, this is actually good music kind of thing.
Like it was just some idea we had, because now it's the social media. I don't even post it. There's guys playing, they call them guitar fluencers, the dudes.
Oh man.
Yeah. And they post every day their new video of them doing crazy stuff in their house, their studio or whatever. I'm really not great at it. I need to post more. I know I do. but that was the joke. And then the other part of it was, or you could maybe like push it to like 1996. So then you get an email address. That's it.
Yeah. A so website.
And then like, you have like an email list, but it stops there.
A newsletter.
that's all you get.
Yep. I like that idea. Try it out.
What you do get is you'd still have access to radio, vinyl. You'd have all the other stuff. It's just, that was kind of.
I mean, who knows with vinyl being like all the way back? Like, who knows what other quote unquote old stuff is gonna come back? You know, like maybe we'll get cassette tapes back soon. So,
you know, social media, it's become what it is.
Yeah,
there's this new trend out there. Where like I'll constantly get ads, and you know the algorithms, all of my shit on there is all music stuff. So like the ads I'll get, sponsored ads, are like a lot of artists posting it's a different reel with the same song over and over and over and over again. And then there's like 45 posts, a slightly little different video, but it's always the same part of the same song over and over and over again. And so I'm like, okay, so is that kind of what it is now, or just completely sonically bombarding people with the same?
It's brainwashing.
And then the you know, there's also like when they ask, should we drop this, should we release this? Bro, I don't know, it's your song, do whatever you
want. Not if you keep blaring it at me every time I scroll.
There's a lot of trends out there like that. Maybe I'm the one that we should be doing it too, but I don't know. I kind of see the same stuff a lot.
it's tough probably moving to that whole aspect, like grow, like doing your, like in, during your career, you still had like CDs and all that, to have it evolve so quick to what it is now, I imagine would be hard for a lot of people.
Totally. Cause okay. So I'm 34, but in like the eighth grade, you know, ninth grade, when I was really, really starting to sink my teeth into music, it was CDs, you know, I said, you go to the FYE or whatever, or the weird media play, and you buy as many CDs as you can. Now I love going to this place called McKay's Used Media and buying a bunch of vinyls and stuff.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I do have my wife and I do have a pretty good vinyl collection now, so we are into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see what socials do. I think streaming is obviously detrimental to the income of bands when you only get 0.03 cents per stream.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving on a bit, I know this is a pretty broad question, but how would you describe the live show, whether it be for Ferris or Cody Jinx, maybe what the difference might be or like anything like that?
Well, a similarity is both are, like I said, are very independent, very DIY. So starting with Cody, this past year, our huge stage production, you know, big venues, 5,000 to 12,000 person venues, our stage production was still built like a bar. We had bar stools, neon signs. Cody is one that we'll never forget where he came from. Mm-hmm. So we even had a section in the show where we'd all get on the stools and play three songs acoustic because he'd say, I cut my teeth, and a lot of these guys cut their teeth literally sitting on a bar stool playing to less than zero people and the bartender. So that, you know, we're giving you a dose of that even at this massive show.
Yeah.
So there's that, you know, so that's the kind of the DIY. It's obviously very produced and stuff, but it's paying homage to that DIY independent spirit. Now, the Ferris shows, Jeff is maybe one of the most charismatic frontmen that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. He'll get on his back, you know, be standing on the PA speakers. Jared, not the bass player, and I'll be jumping up, and it's a active show. It's a garage alt, kind of like an early 90s Pearl Jam, Rage Against the Machine.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So they're both, you can both tell like that independent spirit is still there.
Right on. Yeah. I always think that when it comes to a live shows, like at least for me, that's what makes fans, I think. Like if you go to a Cody Jinks show or a Ferris show and you are unfamiliar with them, I think a good live show is what makes you keep coming back.
For sure.
I think a lot of people, maybe not artists, but a lot of fans forget that it's just like that's probably like the most important. Of course, recording, putting music out is important, obviously, but I feel like the live show is like low key one of the most important like elements of a band.
And also how the artist responds after the show, you know, like I love to go to local shows, and when the bands are done, they immediately go to the merch booth to have a beer and hang out with everybody.
Right.
That's like, people remember that shit, you know, or even if it is Cody and there's a little kid in the front row and he goes over the barrier to give the kid a guitar pick. That's pretty memorable stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You can only
get that at a live show.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, man. And you mentioned earlier, what you were kicking off some project with your brother. Do you want to talk about that at all? Or
yeah, so we back in Massachusetts, we used to play a lot of music together. And I've been here 11 years. He moved here. When did he move here? Not this past October, but the previous October, to mainly be a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And he has really good songs, and they're definitely kind of in more of the spacey alternative aggressive world, like System of a Down and maybe like even some Avenged Sevenfold and in that world, Deftones, but still heavily influenced, you know, Nirvana and all that kind of stuff. These are songs it's kind of like a side project, vanity project, that we just want to get these songs out there, maybe play a show or two and see what happens. We're not afraid if a song is 5 or 11 minutes long. These are songs that are really, really, really catchy and hooky, but they are just purely what we want to do.
Okay. You know,
we both sing on it. We both write the tunes. We kind of started doing it even before I was in Cody. And even me, my brother Joe, and Jeff Ferris, the three of us will all get together and write music. So it's very collaborative, and yeah, it's definitely probably the heaviest project I'm in right now. It's some of them songs are pretty, pretty damn heavy.
Oh yeah. I can't wait for that then.
A lot of vocal harmonies, very melodic. I kind of gave some good examples. So that, trying to get into the studio to finish up some drums over the next 6 weeks or so, get it mastered. Everything else is recorded. I do it at my MIDI studio right here behind me.
Okay.
And yeah, we'll see. Maybe play a show or two, see what happens.
Yeah, that was actually be my next question about if you record with anyone or where you record, but it sounds like you are truly DIY.
I've recorded in a million, I don't know how many studios here in town. Uh-huh. In the big budget ones, I've been Warner, I've done, you know, those kind of studios. And then I've done the intimate ones too. There's this one called Pentaveret over in Berry Hill that I really like. This studio here, an artist that Cody works with a lot, Aaron Vinecourt, we did her record at 4115 Studio.
Oh, nice.
Yep. I've recorded, I don't know how many studios throughout. And then sometimes people have studios in their house that I go to, mm-hmm. or I just send them remote stuff from here.
Yeah. It's crazy how that works too. Like being able to, everyone being in their own place and still being able to make music like with the remote stuff now. And
some of the home studios I've seen are sometimes have nicer stuff than some of the, because the pro studios, you know, there's a lot of people working in there. They can't always keep track of the gear. So some of the gear kind of falls through the cracks a little bit. Some of the, like the plugs and stuff are a little scratchy, but if somebody owns it in their house, they want to keep it as top notch as humanly possible.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's theirs. They want to keep using it whenever they want.
Yeah. It's that reminds me of I don't know if you've heard of Taylor Kimball from out in Texas. He's kind of like that too, from my knowledge. Like he's just his own you know, his own thing, and he's like recorded Co. Yeah, like Co from like his first album, and like all those guys out there, like there's a laundry list of names, and it is really interesting. The whole recording aspect and production aspect goes completely over my head. It just seems like a whole nother world. And it's crazy for people being able to, like, if they do get other producers and they don't do it themselves, it's like, I don't know how you pick and choose. Like, how would you know? I would be like, I don't know what I'm talking about. So who am I to pick and choose when this is these guys' jobs?
Well, I'm extremely picky when it comes to producers.
Okay.
With me, if it's a bigger budget one, I like the track record of what they've done in the past, like knowing their catalog. But then even if it's not, like I like for the producers to be kind of assertive and say like exactly what they want. And then, mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That's the benchmark. They're behind the board. They're driving the ship. That's the benchmark. Then let's try to work for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a fan of like when they just kind of sit there, you do your thing, but then they just keep saying no.
Yeah.
No, that's not, I call it a global non-positioning system. They just tell you who you're not.
Yeah.
So producers, you know, that world, it's very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for example, my brother and I, these songs, we've just decided we're just going to produce them ourselves. We know exactly what we're looking for. We know all of the instruments. He plays keys, drums. I play guitar, bass. We both sing. But we'll run with all of it.
Yeah, right you know? On. Sounds a good operation there, man. So
we'll see how it sounds. It could come out to not be so great. I don't know. We're just gonna. That's the fun part about it.
Yeah, figuring it out. So before we end it here, I like to ask this to artists too. And you've been around for a while with different bands, doing your own thing, doing stuff with Cody Ferris, everything. Is there one point that off the top of your head that you remember to where it was like an oh shit moment, like this is actually, whether it be during a show or some opportunity, anything like that?
There's been a few. Which how many?
Any of them. Go ahead. List them off.
The first one, there's a, let's see if you can see it back there.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of these guitars, that one right there.
Okay.
That guy. We were playing a show in Boston and that one fell over forwards. Oh. And headstock cracks off, right? And we're halfway through the show, and that was an oh shit moment, like
a literal oh shit.
Oh yeah, I jumped too high and landed too hard, and it shook the guitar stand. I had another one on me, it fell over. And yeah, the damn thing cracked off. So that was almost a show derailment. That was a long time ago. That was 2011, 2012.
Okay.
Had an amazing luthier up in Massachusetts fix it. It's better. It'll never break there again. That was a good oh shit moment, I'd say. And then another one was just this past April. we put our Ferris and the Wheels put our big CD release party the night before Cody Jinks played Ascend Amphitheater here in town. Mm-hmm. Ascend is a good 7,500 venue. We sold it out. It's like the big Jinks Nashville return. We had our album release at a cool club the night before. The only problem was I got the worst food poisoning of my life the morning of that weekend.
Ugh, damn.
So not to get too into the details of that, but I had literally like a bucket on stage for both shows.
Oh man.
So
good Lord.
You're never gonna, there's always gonna be those kind of oh shit moments, you know.
Right.
It's like, oh, you haven't, well, I used to be a whitewater rafts guide and it's have you ever flipped? The answer isn't no, it's not yet.
Yeah, it's when.
Yeah, so there's going to be more, even however many years I'm playing music, they're still going to, I know they're going to show their nasty head at some point.
Right. Oh, man.
Funny examples, though.
That works,
now, anyways.
Yeah. But Jake, man, thanks for hopping on. This is a fun conversation, dude. And before we head out, though, the floor is yours. Any music coming up for either of your projects or anything you got going on? Shows, anything like that? Go ahead.
Man, a lot of music. So, like I said, Cody's about to hit the studio. We're going to be down there for 2 weeks. We got that. He's always going to put, that's what we do. We put out music. He just released the Lefty Frizzell thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk too much about what Cody's going to do, but there's a lot of music going on there. Me and Ferris, we have actually a lot of really cool songs coming up. We're going to try to get those tracked in the next 6 months or so. Very psychedelic, alternative rock, you know, it's spacey stuff. It's really cool. And then my brother and I, our thing is the much heavier project. That's almost done. And we'll definitely release it. We might play a few gigs here and there. But yeah, there's a lot of a lot of music going on right now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you got a big year ahead of you, 2025.
I think so, yeah. And we're actually literally this is my current music room, but about to flip the garage to make a bigger music room. So there's that too. A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, keep yourself busy, man. So gotta love it. Thanks for hopping on again, dude. Everyone make sure to check out Jake, everything he has going on. Also, socials or websites too for Ferris or anything like that, so people know where to find you.
Yeah, I mean there's CodyJinks.com, that's the big one, but then ferrisandthewheels.com, we keep our website really up to speed. That thing lists all of our music and shows and videos and stuff. The thing with my brother, that's really in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
No website or anything yet. And then, but all my socials are just at Jake Lentner, LENTNER. Pretty simple. My last name's kind of weird, so nobody else has it.
Yeah, same here. Mine's Berkheim. It's very German. Yeah. But anyway, thanks a lot, Jake. Thanks for hopping on. Thanks, everyone. Yep. Thanks everyone for listening. Also make sure to check out Rage Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials and Google us. You'll find us there. So thanks a lot. We'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. Take you home tonight.